Computer.
Computer. Here we go.
Yeah, welcome to the September 27th, 2023 meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you'd like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the Port Office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of the meeting. This is a preliminary agenda subject to change and approval. So let me call the meeting to order. You can see the clock I can it now. 1:05, and let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
So do I have a motion to approve the agenda as presented? So if we have, we need to have it.
Yeah, I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, and any discussion?
Yes, I'd like to make a, that's an action item. On action item C, approve resolution to approve engagement letter with Schmellett, Sitkin, and Davis. I want that to read approve letter of engagement with CFD Attorney at Law, formerly known as Schmellett, Sitkin, and Davis.
Okay, is there?
As you like, I will second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
There is no opposed. Public comment. There is any public comment?
Beth has a comment.
Oh,
yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So I was hoping to be there today, but I have to make a run at before your meeting ends to pause to bring my foster kittens in for vaccinations. So I figured I'd better participate from home and make it more efficient. I wanted to bring up a couple of things that are connected related to KCAC and to the port. The first thing is I've become increasingly concerned about about people living in Kingston not knowing what projects are queued up for the next few years, and that they'll be happening, and that they're going to be kind of blindsided by it. The example of the traffic light on South and West Kingston, and people being like, "What's going on?" And it's like, you know, duh. But connected to that, I wanted to say I really appreciate the insert, the port newsletter insert in the KCN. And I think I would love to see that commitment. I know it's a significant funding thing, and I thought the timing of this would be good because you're probably going into your budget approval quarter. And I would love to see this continued, and I would love to see this somehow link to like a project page. Maybe I'm hoping Kitsap County might be willing to create a Kingston projects page that then KCAC can share at KCAC meetings, the port can link to perhaps from the newsletter, or somehow we can figure out how to work together to get the word out. I'm going to make a commitment that as an environmental land use chair, I'm going to come prepared with a one pager. And I don't know if I'll create it or if Kitsap County will create it, but I want to have something that people who attend those KCAC meetings can take home and read through. But I'd love to see this be a collaborative effort to help raise awareness about it's just such a significant queue of projects that are going to be happening in the next 5 to 10 years. And I just would hate to see a whole bunch of people feel blindsided by it. So it's going to take kind of an all hands on deck approach. And thank you so much.
Good idea, Beth.
Thank you. I think the question not only is coming, what it's going to be, but how much it's going to be. If you're up a street, how long is it going to be full of, you know, that kind of thing should be included in, to the extent that anyone can predict.
Yeah, and there's one other thing. Sorry, there's one other thing related to the newsletter I forgot to mention. As there's been a typo, commissioners misspelled in this particular part of the template. So just an FYI to whoever is the editor, that all I have like the last five or six issues and commissioners misspelled in Mary's cell there. So FYI.
I'll fix it today.
Thank you very much. Anything else? Okay. So, consent agenda. We have matters that are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion, but if discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commission. And those are to approve a number of things: the August 23rd regular meeting minutes, the September 5th work session minutes, the September 12th work session minutes, the September 15th special session minutes, the September 19th work session minutes, and the August 2023 warrants in the amount of $259,102.12, and EFT payments are part of both. So is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as written?
I so move.
Second that.
Great. Any further discussion? No. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No opposed? Okay. And then we have three action items. First, to approve resolution 2023-09-2701, directing the executive director to amend the 2023 agreement with Washington Port Consultants, PLLC. Greg, is there anything you want to say about?
Yeah, so staff is requesting Commissioner Gould to execute an amendment with Washington Project Consultants to increase the contract from $30,000 to $45,000 to finish out this year. This resolution improves, you know, improves the executive director to sign the agreement. So Washington Project Consultants is basically it's Mark Horton, and he serves as our contracted port engineer. And I think he does such a really great job. He has great value. We generally run around $3,000 to $4,000 per month of billables from him. So we ran into this last year. So this coming year, the budget actually, we budgeted $45,000 for all of next year. So we don't have to come back and do a lot of amendments. He pretty much does it on a time and materials basis. But I think he's an incredible value, and he's an integral part of our team. So I'm asking to finish out this year by increasing the draft for the last quarter by $15,000.
Any other question or discussion?
No, I appreciate the fact that he's charging us below market for what an engineer would be charging. It's for what we get from him and the knowledge that this man has. I just find it as well. Yeah, incredible.
Okay. So do I have a motion to approve resolution 2023-09-27?
So moved.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And motion approved. So the next resolution is 2023-07-2 to approve a resolution to surplus firewood from the top property. Right? Do you have anything you want to say about that?
Yeah, Port staff received required permit with Kitsap County for trees that were deemed dangerous by an arborist on the top property. The trees have been taken down, and Port staff chipped the branches and leaving a considerable amount of timber that can be surplus. Staff is requesting commission approval to surplus this timber so we can open that property back up to public access.
The amount of timber is significant, so we do not want the port to be perceived as gifting of public funds, since it could have a marketable value. So that's why we're requesting the commission approval to surplus that timber.
It looked like as well that the chips are some of the new chips that are around those parts of the bed and stuff.
Yeah.
And they really nice.
It does.
I must say.
Smells great too. Yeah. It's it's been nice to work with. It's not saturated yet, so it's still light and landscape. We've been able to move it quickly. And
the trees were predominantly the grown tree. So
there were
the chips will be very hard and I think we'll provide it with these.
Yep.
Well, I'll suggest that we approve resolution 2023-09-17-02.
I'll second that.
Okay. And I do have one question before we act on this. Do you have any sense of what the value of the timber will be?
Well, we have valued it, but it's not chopped up or, you know, so it's not like already boards, that kind of thing. So
I measured it linear feet. It works out to be about 4.5 cords, just shy of 5 cords, depending on who stacks it. So at Madrona, primarily there's some scraps of maple, but it's really Madrona. At $450 to $500 a cord is what is, if you buy it on the corner, that's really all we can go by. So all the other prices I could get were wholesale prices where, you know, CNC or one of the firewood processors right. would sell it at a wholesale price because then we would mark it up. We're not going to do that. So it's, you know, market value. If you buy it out of a truck or from somebody on the corner, it's $450 to $500 a cord. It's seasoned. It's dry. It's premium firewoods.
Maybe $2,500 in retail. Or on the
farm,
so.
Are you guys planning on cutting it up and having it?
It's in movable pieces right now. We're not, right now it's minimal. You know, we can move it. It can be loaded into a truck with two people or it's movable now. It's not just in logs. They're about 6 foot pieces. I wanted to go minimal until we know what we're going to do with it just before we spend a bunch of man hours up there cutting and bucket right. up firewood. It's movable. It's an easy back in and load up. Whoever comes in on a high bid is the idea.
So. But usually when people buy firewood, it's already cut up and ready to go right in the fireplace.
Well, yeah.
We'd be selling people that would do that.
Okay.
We're not.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Got it.
So yeah. We're okay. Just trying to.
This is.
And actually, if we did cut it up, and probably have wood vultures coming in just sealing it, you know, because they think it's public property, they could just go take it, which is what happens on the side of the road and we see them all the time. So we just left it in chunks. But
yeah, when the arborist laid it all down, he warned me that you might want to move this quick because Madrona laying on the ground is probably not going to last long. So we're kind of on borrowed time. We haven't lost any to theft right now. So we're in good shape. This process moved along just as it should.
Yeah, it took a long time to get that permit, but that's not our fault.
Yeah, yeah. It was good.
Yeah. I'm glad we got a dangerous trees down.
Yeah, and they were, once they got into the fir trees, they found twice as much as we could spot from the ground. He cleaned out a lot of dead branches up there, and it was, and some of that stuff, it was huge. It caused some damage.
So he climbed all the trees in order to ascertain, or?
Only the fir trees that had the widowmakers in.
Oh. Okay.
Well, and then the maple had a couple hanging.
Yeah.
But he didn't really climb any of the Madronas just because they were so unsafe.
Oh, yeah.
And he once he got into the fir trees, it just kind of developed to where he was walking out on branches and kicking stuff loose. Trimmed a lot of ends, so we took a lot of sail area off of the fir trees. So the ends were trimmed, and it really got a haircut. So it's nice. Dan Fields.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Yep.
So the comment. I hear all the time. When are you going to get the non-park back? Is that the anticipation at this point? And do you have a sense of timeline?
Well, we'll have to go through the surplus thing and see when they actually, you know, what it looks like. They'll start to move the trees. So we'll open it up, right, you know, after that. We'll take down the fencing. And it's really, you know, it's just more of a park. You know, it's not really a park area, right? We went through our planning process earlier where we talked about developing that property ultimately. But at least this will open up the public access. I mean, hopefully within short order after we get that removed, we'll have to open it up and remove that timber anyway.
I'd like to comment that somehow that property has been labeled a dog park, and I don't think that we've ever had any intention as a commission to call it a dog park. So we should reference that as a dog park. It's just a part of the ground. It's the Paw property.
You could put a sign in Paw property.
Yeah.
Everyone else in the world refers to it that way, so I wanted to make sure that people recognize that's what we were talking about. All right, so that moves us to resolution 2023. We did vote.
I made a motion. I don't believe
Laura seconded it.
Right, and you had a comment.
And I had a question. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And that moves us to resolution 2023-09-2703 to approve the engagement letter with CSD attorneys at law. Right.
Court commission voted to engage Thompson and Davis for legal services about 6 years ago. Thompson and Davis have renamed their firm CSD attorneys at law. This change was partly in response to involving a number of attorneys to partner. And as the founding partners begin transitioning toward retirement while also growing the firm, staff recommends court commission formally renew our commitment with CSD attorneys at law by endorsing the letter of engagement. The terms of the letter of engagement, though, are if the court commission convened to cancel our any kind of relationship with this law firm at any time. So it's not, in a sense, it's not like a contract, it's just ongoing. Retention of services. And then also it's nice to have an update letter of engagement because it also dictates what the rates are, because the rates have evolved over time. And I know the court commission's always informed that in writing from them. But this is just nice because it gives transparency to the process. Is one of the key responsibilities of the court commission as became legal counsel.
Yeah.
But I think they've done a very good job for us. They represent, I think, 15 out of the 75 courts in the state of Washington, certainly. And also they are the legal counsel for the Washington Public Courts Association. Staff is requesting the court commission endorse the funds for their engagement with CSC and use of law.
So is there a motion?
Motion to approve resolution 2023-09-2703 to approve the engagement letter with CSD law firm. Attorneys at law, formerly known as Mellon Sipkin Davis.
Second that.
Neighbor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So that turns us to the special items.
Have any discussion items other than I guess if they go under discussion items, but some reports, but just the chamber, I think we're doing pretty well. It's been a pretty strong year, I think, overall for the chamber. But I think we are looking for some new chamber board members, and we're actively going to be reaching out to different companies and people to join the board. And I think the year has been pretty successful for the chamber. I think there's always a little bit of struggle. We had a great meeting yesterday talking about the concerts in the Cove and securing sponsors for those concerts in order to preserve that and keep going. But we also just put in a new kiosk. I want to thank Tori and all the team over here at the board. The staff did such a great job. We installed a kiosk, which was actually funded by grants from Kitsap Bank. And it basically highlights, you walk off the ferry on fast, the foot ferry end of it, and right by where we have the parking. So it's protected. It's underneath the overhang there. You'll see a brand new large kiosk next to our parking kiosk.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's interactive and
Yeah.
That was a bit of a long time coming too. We originally purchased the kiosk looking for it to be able to highlight businesses. So when people get off the ferry, they can search for different types of services, businesses in the Kingston area. And then the kiosk, I think, tripled in price during COVID. You couldn't get it. It took a long time to actually acquire the kiosk. And then we did really work with the state ferry. They were trying to get the kiosk in a little different location, but the penetration into the cement and whatnot just ended up being easier to move it. And then Tori and his team, they just installed it. And so it was pretty secure because it's pretty tall and pretty top heavy. So it has to really be secured. So the previous location, just not what it were. Somebody jump up on it and pull the kiosk. That's what we were worried about. Just pulling around. So anyway, I want to thank Tori. I know that was a lot of time and effort. We need to have great Wi-Fi, which we've been putting in too. And you guys have been updating that too.
Yeah, it looks like a good spot. Yeah,
it's really great.
Fun project. Once we got the puzzle together, knew where we're going to end up.
So that was really good. And I know you wanted an update on the top property. So you have that now. That's all I had for discussion as this time.
I have something that I got an email on that I forwarded it in relation to the new grocery outlet. Looks like they're having a ribbon cutting ceremony. And there was an invite for us to say a few words about the grocery, coming into town and things like that. So
October 12th at 10 a.m.
I think it was actually 9:45 because there's something prior to the actual unit.
I think the calendar.
Put it on our website.
It's up there. It's just updated.
So they've been doing a lot of work and people are probably curious about it. But they went out for, so Grocery Outlet is a franchise. So Grocery Outlet that sells leases the property, then they have a national contract with some of those key suppliers. Then the franchisee comes in and then they operate the business kind of how they see fit. This is John Ward. He's coming in and he's operates a Grocery Outlet in Bellevue currently. And he's actually moving over here. They're gonna move and live over here on this side. They're renting currently, but so he was able to secure that franchise. But I think that didn't even happen until this summer. So Grocery Outlet was moving forward, but then they had to figure out who's gonna be the franchisee, and that's John Voorhees. So I think he'll be a really great addition to the community. He's already trying to get engaged. I'll talk to him.
Voorhees.
I believe they have joined the chamber, and I believe that they're looking around, what they're going to do. But I think I kind of shared with them, our master list of all the community organizations, and so they could start reaching out.
I think in fact they picked a couple that they have going to be some kind of in copies.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Sure. It came up in there and invited not everybody. Yeah.
Just today?
I just got mine.
Just
today.
And I just sent you another, so you probably got to give it to this one.
Okay.
That would be great, though, because it really does provide localized. Grocery, just having to head all the way out to Safeway and head over to Fallsville. So it's really good to see that result.
Really, where they had a sort of BMP in.
Yeah. Well, that and Henry's. That really all they have is bait.
Yeah.
And water. For that.
That's your dinner.
Exactly. Yeah. a guest customer or a guest doctor that didn't use Instagram. Well, not a lot, a few that trust someone to pick their apples and tomatoes thing. So that did work out. They were delivering right to the marina. A couple times the Instacart person even took it down to the boat. So that worked out well.
Oh, in good.
Okay. Yeah, so we were able to fill that gap a little bit.
Oh, good.
Maybe grocery outlet will do that also.
Yeah.
Thing is shop there.
Well, the EV use and that stuff will increase. That's nice.
That's part of the fun of being down there too. I've talked to people down there that love being able to borrow, you know, the car and you go to, you know, the other places around town.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a nice service. People like it. Word travels fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we did just grant, local parks maintenance grant here, RCO, and two of the things that we had listed there, we replaced the EVs currently out because they're getting up. We did exhaustive kind of a list with Mark Horton. And so anyway, that grant has been submitted. And like last time I mentioned, match fire report. It's a new grant that the RCO came up with, but it's for deferred maintenance or any equipment that, you know, they're deferring replacing. So it's a pretty great grant. It's a $100,000 cap. So it can go a long way. So you can buy the $100,000. So we'll see how we do.
Yeah.
They'll take a look at everybody and go through the typical banking process. We got it.
Great.
What is the situation with electric vehicle charging stations?
So we there's a bunch of money that's out there. I just talked to Mark Horton this morning about it. So there's a number of different emails that have gone around, but they weren't, and you go on the website, it was a little bit problematic to navigate, but I had I got an email, so I forwarded it to Mark and Tori. We're going to go through and apply for EV grants. There's quite a bit of money out there. And I'd spoken with Christine Rolfes, you know, briefly about it. We don't have it engineered, right? But, and so I said, usually, you know, a lot of times they want to have at least like a 10 to 30% design, right, when you apply to these things, or they kind of throw you out, you know. And she said, just apply for the money, just apply for it, because nobody's got really have the design. There's a million people out there that do EV charging stations, right? And they're kind of all over the board, but not a standardization because all the manufacturers are creating an OEM situation with what they use for technology. But I talked to Mark this morning. We're going to meet and talk tomorrow. We have some time. There's actually two pools of money. So, but we're one hasn't even opened up yet. It'll open up here in October. So the other one is open, and so we're going to throw our hat in and try to figure out where to put these EV stations, and we're going to try to do something that's hopefully fairly exhaustive. But the grants do almost everything, so they cover almost the whole scope of everything for you. And so the contacts I had, he reached out to them, and he said it's should be a really good grant program where we don't have to invent the wheel. They'll do everything for you, soup to nuts. So that would be, so we're going to try to put a bunch of EV charging stations to see wherever we can put them. I got to look into it because I asked them, can we just put them anywhere in the Port District, potentially, right? Why not? Versus on port property. So he goes, I think we can put them in the port. We'll see if we can put them in the Port District. Well, the closest ones, I think, are really just a Safeway. And that's about the only ones I know of.
It's maybe required in their permit.
Yeah, probably.
To be able to do that.
Yeah. So this is kind of when I haven't really, he was trying to actually research it. He ran the same thing I did. The website doesn't have as much information. How do you navigate it? But the email, and I just got this email and I forwarded it. He said, hey, look, there's two contacts. They were like encyclopedic about what you need to do, had a bunch of information. So we're gonna pursue that. Yeah. We're in the process though.
My sense is there hasn't been commuters to be able to the people who are down for 3 hours at Fort Wayne. So maybe both on site and elsewhere in the district.
Yeah. I kind of think of it as if you get the money and you've been saturated in the area, actually, even for, you know, one thing you find is like they submit the use of a parking stall. But if all the stalls were, you know, you had all the stalls, many of the stalls, then it wouldn't be an issue as to having a dedicated stall just to EV only. But I think part of it has been due to the cost of it and because it hasn't really been subsidized. So they kind of put them out there because there's not everybody driving a, you know, an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to get what's the right mix. But let's say you drive down Main Street and they have four stalls, right? And then they sit empty sometimes and then sometimes you're booked up. But it isn't where it's like you could just park anywhere. If you have an EV, this park, it doesn't matter how, you know, if you have enough of them, I think. So I think we'll just have to look at what the distribution, how do you analyze that? But certainly as a transportation hub, we should.
And are they pretty easily movable when we do the park and parking areas?
That's a good question.
It's the hard one.
That's the engineering part of it. I'm not so sure. That's one. and that goes into like if they're funding the infrastructure goes in, right? So I think it's the. There's, I think you can move the kiosk, you can, but you have to choke them in. So how do you, just like your house, you can move your house, but where are the utilities located? So I think that's part of it.
They have an app.
They have a whole team of people that help you do the whole thing in terms of citing it and making, doing the analysis. That's what I'm saying. But we don't have that.
Like, no, I didn't think people that have it.
Yes. Yes.
But that was my question. What Mary asked is, you know, with the possible development down at the port, where we put it is going to be crucial because we really don't have to move it.
No.
That would be a little bit.
As long as accessible. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like any site selection process.
Right.
But it's a great program. There's plenty of money. I think so. I think we're going to avail ourselves for sure.
Terrific. Okay, we're ready for the finance report.
Okay, and usually I keep this really short and sweet, but we do have some financial people in the room, so if you do have any questions and want to say things, let me know. Since I've been here, it's been really anyway. So, in looking at the P&L, which is the income statement. Starting looks like this. So we have net operating revenue year to date of 1.77 and total operating expense prior to depreciation of 1.64 million, resulting in net operating before depreciation of 124,548. And when you include everything with other income expenses, the property taxes, all of that, we're just about breaking even for the year. And that's a little ahead of where we expected to be because we had discussions prior to going into 2023, knowing that we had some maintenance things that we hadn't addressed, deferred maintenance, and also this economic development, which is cost, we're paying on that. And as well as the credit card charges, which ended up, we have a processing company for our credit cards, and it's more than doubled since I've been here, just a little over 2 years. The good news is we're moving away from them with our new software conversion, so we'll be saving a lot of money. It's actually paying for the conversion, so I'm glad to see that. And I've looked at a lot of different companies, and this one in particular has a lot of ad fees, processing type of fees that normally aren't apparent. So we're working on the budget now. So some good numbers to come later, which will be what next month, I think, is when we're going to be doing that. Mm-hmm. As far as the balance sheet goes, we have cash and equivalents of $2.84 million. We still have an outstanding LTGO bond that's on the books for $688,000. So with everything included, we're at $2.21 million, an increase of about $314,000 for the year. on our cash balances. Is there any questions? Anything you want more information about?
We'll be able to see the year-to-date actuals, the budget, the actual, and then last year as well. That's
right. Time.
That's super helpful. Right.
Any other questions or discussion?
At this time.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Okay, that takes us to the comment session number two. So I'm sitting looking at that speaker.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, your eyes fall around the room, whatever. Okay.
I'd like to chat with Andre just for a bit afterwards.
I love that. Sounds good.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Commissioner's board. Where are you, Sasha?
So I got to go to the environmental seminar last week, which was, as I stated yesterday, there were a couple of the topics that I really did not take notes on because I really felt like I needed a chemistry degree to understand some of the things they were talking about. But that being said, there were other topics that were just absolutely fabulous. And I did learn, but yeah, it was like, oh, wow, that's intense. Brain kind of hurt. We stayed down, it was down at Point Ruston, and come to find out that the hotel that we were staying in was actually built on a cleaned up site that used to have a Sarco smelter on it, which I didn't realize, but that was pretty interesting. We took a tour of the Port of Tacoma. I did not realize how many cleanup sites were actually down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing how many cleanup sites there are down there. They are either have completely cleaned up or they are working at cleaning. Or they have capped, or but there was one site that, you know, you almost want to cry when they tell you about it, that it had a smelter plant on it that the arsenic that's leaking into the ground is basically 3 football lengths in depth, and there's really nothing they can do about it. It's just going to keep leaching, and there's really nothing they can do. But that being said, they have done so much what they have accomplished. They have a goal of being by 2050, I believe it is, emissions free. 2050-ish, they said. They added ish on the back of it. There is a documentary film called Turning the Tide that talks about what they have done over the years, which they recommended that we look at it. They are the largest deep water container port, which is pretty interesting. There was a topic on diversity, inclusion, and environmental justice and imports, and how we should include that in our strategic plan. The PFAS 101, that was the... This was a bit, you probably would have loved the conversation, but it was just really over the top. They talked about there is a PIDP and MARAD program that deal in port infrastructure and development, and that 25% of their funds are reserved for small ports. And the typical grants they give to small ports are $5 to $10 million. Kalama, he said that MARAD, that if you end up doing a presentation to them, he said it's amazing how when they did their presentation, they respond when you talk about how this will affect your community. If that's something that's in our ballpark that we can actually do something with, I Nope. But it has to do with infrastructure and sounds like, wow, let's, you know, at least look into it and see. They got, we received at environmental conference, I don't know if they did it at the last one or not, but they're now doing a program where a port can bring up a thumb drive and have like a little 3 to 5 minute presentation to update everybody on what's going on in their port. And so we had Olympia, Everett, Longview, Seattle, Vancouver, Bellingham, Tacoma, Grace Harbor, Kalama, that all got up and gave updates on environmental things and other things that were going on in their port. They talked about the updates to the Growth Management Act, that the three updates are in housing, climate change, and environmental justice, and that we should make sure our comp plans are in line with county comp plans so that we don't aren't going, which I'm sure you already know that, but just have to say it. There was a talk on green shipping corridors, and that's where they were talking about the 2050-ish, they wanted to be zero emission corridor. And that Crowley, the company Crowley, is developing the first fully electric tugboat, which is interesting. Let's see here. Alternative fuel production. It's already happening around the world. And apparently Korea is way ahead in the game. I did not realize. And they, the comment that they made that I just wrote this down because it was so important to listen to, that if we are going to be part of this, this alternative fuel production and climate change issues thing, it says we need to be more involved or we are going to be left out. And it wasn't just referring to ports in general, it was referring to the United States as well. That's what they were talking about. But anyway, that is my day. It was a wonderful conference. It was a small conference. There was only like 120, 125 people there. But and it was really good about it.
That's right. We had a someone gave a presentation on the MIRA for the finance seminar as well. Mm-hmm. So I have that. And we added all of those to our funding opportunities.
Oh, good.
Too, so that we're looking at.
That's a 5 to 10 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually had to go to the restroom right in the middle of that whole talk. And when I walked back in, and I tried to be as quickly, and I walked back in the room, and I heard the guy that was standing, and he goes, 5 to 10. That's what's available for small ports. And I'm going,
yeah.
I waited by the door, and the first person that walked out, I grabbed him and said, 5 to 10, what? million, trillion, what is it?
Yeah.
So then I went back
and I think some of those same issues about alternative fuel concerns are going to be covered in the Women's Conference in October.
It has been covered at quite a few of our conferences lately. They've always had someone that's talking about all the different alternative fuel methods and how we need to catch up. We need to, and the Port of Tacoma actually, they have 6 all-electric yard tractors.
Oh.
And those things are cool. They took old yard tractors and refurbished them to be all-electric, and they were, 3 of them were plugged in as we were sitting there looking, and they looked really good. You know, they go around, they pick things up, they move things around there, you know. But I thought, wow, that's pretty, you know. I mean, we already have electric vehicles, so at least we're progressing. Maybe our next truck we get can be, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really cool.
And some of the landscape equipment over from the 2-stroke gas engine. Yeah. Tried one piece and it never got put down. It was, that was the go-to piece. And so now we have a few pieces, string trimmers, one of our hand quick blower instead of the backpack blower. So yeah, we're moving that direction as well.
Yeah, it's definitely quieter at times when it's
certain. Well, the hedge trimmer, you don't use it but twice a year, but when you do use it, you're trimming at arm's length and that exhaust is right in your face.
Yes.
So you got 6 hours a day you're trimming hedges, breathing 2-stroke. And the electric version of that has done everything we've needed it to and hasn't bogged down and
right.
less noise, less environmental issues.
Like, yeah, you
know, again, a lot safer in the long run as far as the respiratory issues.
That's a really good thing to update on our accomplishments too, of how we have converted over, you know, some of our things to, I mean, we started out early in the game with the EVs that we used for people transporting around, but the lawn equipment, that's huge. You know, that's really good.
Yeah, and I have to thank Bainbridge Park and Rec because they gave me a lot of pointers on what they tried and didn't work and to what they've tried and they've stuck with. They've made some real deep investments on some
equipment.
Yeah. We're not that big to worry about those big units like they have as far as backpack loaders and big battery packs. And
right.
We can do what we're doing now. And we'll just, it's working.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Mike Chesmore has brought it up many times. Yeah. I know we probably all know what he brought up each time. He's talking about the yard waste, how to recycle it or repurpose it, or he even said it could go to his house. should we suggest that he pull the truck up and all gets dumped in his truck, or
on a mowing day and then we either. Yeah, it's the grass is problem. If we keep grass on site, the decomposition of grass generates a lot of heat.
Yeah.
It generates a lot of heat. There's a lot of moisture involved as well. Bees move in like overnight. We have bees nests. And they're anything that's yellow and stings, I call a bee. But you're right. There's the ground wasp, where we just had a pretty big nest taken out down by ADOT. And if we keep grass clippings on site, that's what we're going to have, is we're going to have a lot of bees to deal with, wasp, stinging insects.
Thank you.
Yeah. He stops every so often in the office, and it's in my conversation log that Mike and I speak about. This. And every time he says it, I put it in the log. Just
holding the back of the truck up?
Well, I've said, if you have a way to move it, you know, come get it. It's the branches from hedge trimming and leaves from raking. Now that's we could start to keep that in a spot. It's just a matter of, you know, where do we want to make that?
It would still attract.
It does. Yes, it does. It as it decomposes, it generates heat. At this time of year, they'll move in any place warm. It's a haven for spiders and insects of all kinds and rodents, and so that's some of the logistics where we don't want to blow it against the fence of the bone launch, because then we're giving that stuff a habitat to live in. So it's a tricky spot. Yes, we do generate a lot of cuttings, and could it go somewhere? It does. And perfect example of what we're using the Toth property branches for. It's going on grounds and it looks beautiful. It smells great. It's going to put us in a great spot for the wet season. Erosion is going to be way down. That is a tool that we have to use right now, and we're using it.
Are you transporting that via your truck up to the
property? No, just the Gator, the John Deere Gators, and it's bring it down in big garbage can loads.
What we do where it's appropriate, then in some instances, because there's so many people down there, it's not like your house, and people associate stuff like, hey, I want to compost everything at my home, but it doesn't always translate in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people going through here. And well, you don't want to create habitat for the wrong things, you know, then next thing we know, we got to be having habitats everywhere.
So I know we've all heard Mike say this, and John and Mike love too. Can you enter into a conversation with him about how it could actually work?
We've talked about that. It's an ongoing thing with Mike.
Okay, so yeah, what?
Every time he brings it up, I'll tell him the same thing.
So what needs to change for it to turn into an action?
Well, if Mike wants to come down and load up his truck with trimmings on the day we're trimming, he can do that. We're not going to pile the stuff up.
Does he know?
Or haul it to?
He has been told that. So Mike experienced a traumatic brain injury in Vietnam.
I know.
So this conversation starts when he thinks of it. It's like we've never talked. It's like I introduce myself every time. Mm-hmm. So I've been here 4 years. And so it's an ongoing conversation. I tell Mike the same thing each time. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say to him next time he brings it up to me.
Yeah.
Ask for an action plan.
Yeah. Well,
figure out the steps.
Yeah.
Because just saying, yeah, isn't a big thing.
Sure thing. Yeah.
Okay. Is that all right?
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Steve?
Well, I haven't done a whole lot this month meeting wise with being a single puppy parent. Mm-hmm. but anyway, a couple of things to note. The Land Use and Environment Subcommittee of the Advisory Committee met on the 8th. And so we had some good discussions about the progress of the comprehensive plan. Talked about some climate change things pretty similar to the county comp plan and how we're interacting with that in relation to the port focus. And we had some good conversations, no decisions made at this point because the county is still obviously in their deliberative component. Looking at the environmental impact statement, and there'll be, those pieces that'll come together. But it looked like that they were going to kick that further out. So probably nothing coming until the beginning of next year, from what it sounded like. And then I attended the KTAC meeting, albeit via Zoom, and that was not a stunning experience, I'll say, but you're muted and there's no way to interact other than raise your hand and that you're not being looked at all. So it's like I had my hand up the whole time. Yeah. So, anyway, then they unmute you, to take your. I was not able to give our normal report because I couldn't get in. So anyway, that was kind of frustrating. And everything else, I think has been our regular report sessions. Nothing else really to report.
And Christine, we got to meet Christine.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was great to meet with her. Yeah. That's it for me.
And my sense is that she understands what partnership is between agencies and that we have to for it. Thank you, Sue. My commissioner report is really about upcoming events. To note the Discover Kingston session from 4 to 7 on Monday, October 2nd. And I believe we have setting up for a booth there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we are also.
Good. And then on Saturday, October 21st, is the Kingston Community Conversation, which is back in person this year after being virtual last year. And it is an amazing opportunity for people in the community to think about solutions to things that bother them, things that they think could be better. And the court has been a sponsor since it began. And I think, Laura, you're going to be facilitating and one of the breakout groups.
Okay.
And we'll see about Greg and Steve. And, and I think it's really important because every time that this occurs, specific programs and projects have been identified. And that happened. Kingston Cares was an originator. I worked for them. And they started several new programs and so on and so forth. I didn't have the whole list of actual programs in my head, but they, people not only say, we want to see this happen, but they sign up to help.
and to get together afterwards and figure this out. So it's, I think it's been very worthwhile. And I'm just hoping that as many of us can participate as we can, because it really gives you a perspective that isn't just about, I hate this, I hate that. What are they going to do this? It's really about what can we do. And it's really exciting. And that's my conclusion. And that leaves us to staff reports. Greg, you want to start?
No, Audrey, do you have
Well, we are, this week we will finalize the mapping to our accounting software. I know that's real exciting for everybody, but it is for us because we'll be off of QuickBooks. It's gone really well. We already went through one person, actually two people. The owner was working with us at the consulting firm. So, but we got a really good handle on it, and we're very excited to roll that out. They'll be doing the configuration next month. And then after that, we'll be just testing and getting ready for the Marina software conversion. And that will allow for the two to be totally interactive, transactional. Yes. And I'm most excited about the opportunities for the frontline staff and our customers. There'll be a customer interface. It'll really make things more efficient. We'll be able to handle more types of payments. I'm just really excited. It's something that it allows us to gather more data than we've ever had available to us before, to have a real good idea of what our business strategies need to be and all of that. We'll have a further reach to the community and other customers to grow business. So anyway, we're really excited about it. So more to come on that. And we have also been working on the budget for 2024. And it's been a really great experience because we've been able to work as a team to go through this process. We would have two weekly meetings, and in those meetings, we would assign specific expense or revenue types to, staff and our coworkers. And so, for example, Tori would come to us with, what kind of maintenance do you need? A zero balance budget, where you're actually building in and thinking about everything that you need to do so that. A lot of times it gets noisy if you just bring historical data over for your budget because who's watching what and, how do we know we need all these subscriptions? And so it's been a real good scrubbing process for us to really identify what our needs are. And, we'll see where we come out at the end of this week to know, okay, what do we need to cut? What adjustments do we need to make? And that kind of thing. And it's also allowed us to have the staff be a part of the discussion on, okay, if we want to reach this goal for our revenue, how are we going to do it? And what do we need to do to get there? What are the different strategies that we have? All of this kind of, it's been some really good conversations and things that, maybe Ray or Tori might not have heard before, prior, so I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it's been pretty dang good.
Yeah, my vocabulary is a lot.
Yeah, but it really spurs a lot of conversation. So I appreciate Ray for letting us kind of take the not so easy road, but in the end it's worth it, I think. So that's not all I have. So
will the new accounting package produce financial statements, or will you still need to go into Excel?
They'll produce financial statements, right? We get a bill of all the reports. Custom report writer is really easy. We know a little bit, Stacy more than me, of kind of programming a little, but really super easy. The amount of drill down you can do and just,
sure,
it's awesome. Yeah. We're super excited because right now, honestly, if Stacy were to leave, for example, we really wanted something that could be sustained even when we leave, because I know how it is when you have all this built in, you know, X lookups and all these things in Excel. And then someone comes in behind you and goes, what am I supposed to do? And then all your hard work, you know, and everything goes away. So for succession planning and just to, you know, be able to make it ease of use, we're super excited about it. It's a
true accounting system.
Problems, but it's, you know, it's geared almost really individual business owners originally, you know, so it's like ubiquitous. A lot of people use it, but it's really not a great thing software per se.
Right.
And it's got some serious, if he has it, like really, let's say almost, we really do have accountants and finance people. But if you were a non-accountant, it'd be very easy to make mistakes using QuickBooks and put in, introduce bias, all sorts of things, and get misinformation. So it's, you know, you almost have to be almost more sophisticated to even think of using QuickBooks correctly, making sure you get accurate reporting. And I think that that is really compromised the information that the commission's had for years, where now, you know, you're going to get really robust data that is going to be rock solid going forward. And then there's going to be less room for error or people going, like, you can't go back and just, you know, change your monthlies for years, or, you know, there's just a lot of things that are accounting process. But that's also because we have really good staff and they know what's wrong with it and what's missing. And so they correct that. So I think, so it's going from QuickBooks to Sage is the software we're using. And then we're going to be migrating from, we have a Marina software, but it's sort of like almost an original package. It might even have been a beta tested great software, Scribble, but they got the new software and the staff went through a very, very robust process looking at all the Marina software. But of course, Marina software, it has to work and talk with the account software to be halfway reasonable. And there's a lot of them that have like really serious gaps. You don't have large purveyors or really like, you know, Oracle or, you know, different manufacturers, Microsoft going in. So it's SQL based, just like our accounting software, but they'll be able to integrate the two of them. So it will, I think it's really, we don't get a lot of good data from the Marina. We should have this data. Mm-hmm. And normally you would have these reports that would give you, so you could do business, you know, actually focus on the business. So we'll have that down there. I think that's going to be, and they did a whole financial analysis of that to do an assessment of all the different softwares, which was good because, you know, I had my biases, right? And they said, no, and they, you know, they explained why, like, we're not going to go, we should go that direction. And so, yeah, I respect that. So we are going to go with Marina and I can tell you a lot of courts are looking at us because they've had such trouble with their Marina software, and they've recently migrated a number of them over the past 5 years to new Marina software, and they're all dissatisfied. So we have high hopes, mm-hmm. and I hope that it becomes, you know, whatever we do, I think it's going to be very successful, and then hopefully maybe the industry standard. But I think it would be good if the whole industry raised the level of professionalism and the quality of the analyses and the data and how things are run from a public rates standard, just raise that up. So I'm very appreciative of the staff, mm-hmm. you know, bringing that to the Port of Kingston, plus everybody else. That would be very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To reiterate what Audra said about the budget process, it's really nice being involved and gets me thinking about what the calendar looks like for next year. So I've already started a lot of that planning. We start talking about it now and be easier to execute on next year because you've already thought about a lot of the details. As far as maintenance work goes, we're finishing up a couple projects that were started midsummer. The boat launch handrails high on that list. We it was unsafe, and we were in the process of making it a lot safer. Right now it's unsafer. Just with we had a hitch in the giddy up with momentum. It's okay. It's not like it's going to fall over, but it's taken me a little longer to get it completed than I wanted it. So that's high on our priority list. Irrigation shutdown and blowout for the winter. That'll start to happen now. It's kind of a process. It's introducing air into the system, and it, you little bits so we don't break the pipes with air. The idea is to not break pipes with freezing, so we want to blow them out now. So that's a little bit of a process, and it's just time consuming. It's it takes about a week to blow out all the irrigation lines, and so that's underway. And then we're shuffling seasonal stuff, making room for Christmas, which has already started. Christmas lights have already gone up in some parts of the port. And it's going to be a stellar Christmas season again. Yeah, there's a lot to move so we can bring Christmas lights out of storage. It's a big shuffle that happens each season.
I think you might have seen down at the bar, so we are some of the rocks. Yeah. Just to make the penstock safer and more secure. But we've had a degradation of that breakwater. We are going to have more of a formal survey done of the breakwater. But it is an old breakwater. But anyway, we have, I think, Tori, you put out the contract and you know, get with Global Diving in order to come in with their small barge and be able to remove those rocks with some divers. And that will be done, I think, pretty quick here.
Yeah, they'll mob out today. What we needed them to do this phase is they'll be done with. They're on track. So, but it opened up. Well, I guess we kind of knew what we were going to get into when we started moving stones around the bottom. You know, some of these stones were rather large, but they're holding up what's sloughing down now. So, you know, we took our time and ID'd kind of what was going to happen when some of those stones moved, and it happened. So they were able to hunt and pack and make sure they moved the right ones and didn't move others. And they were able to trim some off. So when the guest dock comes down on the -4 tides, it doesn't contact those stones anymore. So we were able to avoid a lot of damage. There were a couple big stones right underneath the dock.
Yeah.
We knew they were there because we could see the hump on those -4 tides. We knew there was some pressure there, and just who knows, maybe the next one was going to punch a hole in the guest dock. It's going well. They're a safe group. I've had the pleasure of actually co-working with a lot of those guys two guys on that cruise. Out of the four guys there, I used to work with two of them. So, small world. I mean, you call the right guys and they show up. It is. Well, and my first job at Foss Environmental was a circle. I put all the silk screen in along the commencement bay. So when they took all the topsoil off of that whole hill was shaved like 8 inches deep. And so it opened it up to just raw dirt. And all that, every time it would rain, would rush down in the commencement bay, and it made this huge turbidity issue. So me and a couple of other Coast Guard guys that we had gotten out, we went to work with Foss Environmental, we laid all the silt screen to keep that dirt on that hill. And after the first big rain, it failed, and we had to go do it again. And every time it would rain, it would blow all that silt screen out. It helped. It was just one of them things. It was a lot of dirt coming off that hill. They shaved it and didn't put any kind of dams in to stop the erosion. Anyway, it was a fun job. So I saw it many years ago, probably close to 30 years ago, when it was bald.
Yeah.
It literally bald, and they moved to all those homes. And
they that was blew a it on.
Neighborhood. Yeah.
January 17th, 93.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Mm-hmm. Too. So, yeah, I spent a lot of time in Ruston and a couple of those environmental cleanups. And, yeah, it's pretty dirty down there.
Circle.
Yeah, full wrecking. Isn't that true? Yeah. Small world.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been an exciting season. We've got a lot done this summer, and you know, finish up a few projects now and then jump right into Christmas.
Chris, yeah.
Well, just working with these guys on the budget. We do have a new customer service coordinator in the office, Haley Anderson. She's doing wonderfully. She's picking up on everything very quickly. She's a good support for Rose, so we're super happy to have her. We also have a part-time seasonal kind of hanging on a little bit. His name's Jared. He's doing really well too, so lots of help out there for everybody. I think that's outside of what they've said. That's pretty much where we're at.
Yeah.
It's been busy.
Yeah, we've also the Washington Public Port Association, the Marina Committee, So we had Port of Seattle brought over some staff, Port of Anaforis came over, Eric Fitch, executive director with the EPA came, and then we had a Zoom meeting. So we had quite a number of different port marina operators attend. And I think we're having a pretty good dialogue, you know, amongst the Marine Committee. We're trying to troubleshoot a lot of the issues. There was actually concurrent with this meeting, there was the Pacific Northwest Waterways meeting with the head of NOAA and the deputy director for NOAA and NIMS, because the permitting issues have, it's really, really troubling for a lot of ports. And this whole new revised calculator that NIMS has instituted was one of the discussion items that we talked about. And you could dominate the whole meeting about that. But at least I think it's really on a lot of people's radar. They had over 200,000 people for this public comment period about, they had to revisit the public comment period about what they did for instituting the calculator, because it didn't really see the light of day for, you know, the public didn't know about this meeting. It was held and they got invited after the meeting actually occurred. So there was only a few insiders from big ports that have lots of staff. You know, they're talking all the time with the feds, like Seattle. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about that. We had a derelict vessel program. They did a presentation with Troy Wood, did a thing about, because they just passed a number of different state laws and they tightened up some things. So we talked a little bit about what their challenges are, because they have like 170-foot boat down in the Port Tacoma, and that is sinking. And it's going to sink. It's going to sink onto cap of a Superfund site.
Oh, yeah.
So the problem is, you know, when you hit the cap, so they have, what they do is they put a cap to contain all the contaminants that are submerged underwater, right? Because it's better with the PCBs to not disturb it. You just cap it to contain it. But if something comes down and eliminates, you know, or presses on that cap and removes it, it now exposes the PCBs, right?
Yep.
So here you have a derelict vessel in effect, affecting Superfund cap. So, but something like that could be easily like a $3 million cleanup and take all the, you know, huge portion of all the money they have. So then it has to, okay, then where's this money coming from the federal government? Who's going to pay? How do you actually prevent the ship from sinking? So this is this chain of custody from feds to state to the owners to port, right? Mm-hmm. So we navigated it with that tug, and fortunately, the state came in and took ownership of the tug, but they didn't get to actually execute on pulling that tug out of the water before it broke free and went aground over at Jefferson Point, right? So that's what we're trying to figure out. Well, how do we better manage this risk? When we all see the risk, you can see it coming, and how can we do a better job? Because the cost of trying to respond to something that's already failed is back, like it's huge, versus it's prevention.
Even knowing that one of the inspectors that the guy took out was able to jam a screwdriver through the hole.
Yeah, it was wild.
It's like, come on.
And you can see it at low tide. You know, it was like,
Who is it?
The old tug, about 80-foot tug.
No, I'm sorry. I mean one currently in Port of Scotland.
Oh, it's 170-foot vessel and thing too. Yeah, it's even the federal government is doing this because they're surplusing. This is an old icebreaker, the original last wooden icebreaker that was served in Antarctica. And so it gets surplus for nothing, $5,000-$10,000. Then people get it, and then they think they can make a buck off it, or they get it for free. They try to do whatever. So the problem is you're passing this problem from the federal and the Seattle Community College. They did it actually with some of their vessels. So then it gets abandoned. They get it for a buck or whatever. Very minimal money in a Marshall's auction. It's actually legally, you know, but then if they don't transfer the title, right? So there's all these things, but they go and take the vessel. Yeah. There's a lot of problems with how it's managed. Mm-hmm. And so we just talk about, hey, we got to find a solution. That's right. There's got to be some way to cross between jurisdictions. And also not just here, the state legislator gave DNR a lot more money. And that could all be gone if they sit on this one vessel. So here, here they got a lot more funding, but that, so it's got to be addressed. So we're thinking about what are the solutions to that. But the Marina Committee, I think, is doing a great job. And then the good thing with WTP and Eric Fitch, he's partnering with Pacific Northwest Waterways. They lobby more at the federal level. WTPA really handles more at the state level, Washington Public Port Association. So that's good. So we have representation because we're members of both. Like a lot of little tiny ports, they're not members of PNWA. They don't even know what they do. But they're actually, they do represent us to a lot of feds, which is why they have Noah on a conference call right now. Anyway, I really appreciate all their efforts, and I appreciate, a lot of the ports coming together, and just you identify what the problems are, and then we start coming up with positive solutions. And then we met with Christine Rolfes at a work session. And I just want to say again, I think there's going to be, I know there's going to be some follow-up. And we're going to start creating this dialogue. State Ferries responded for the Discover Kingston. They're going to be there. And we all have our problems, but if we get out in front of people, maybe they can also give them at least their perspective, if not like some little bit of information about if people have some questions and about what we're doing or what the other different departments are in the county. So that, I think having that here in Kingston, that's pretty major coup. I think they have 40, 50 booths minimum or tables of different,
people. Beth just said in the chat that there's 60 organizations coming to Discover Kingston.
Let's get that back down. Cool.
We'll probably
notice
that, so we can.
That's what, And then we'll publicly notice we've already publicly noticed the grocery outlet.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
And I said, so Mary, you should have an invite to that too. So if that, and I don't think they want everybody to send it as kind of an email out, I think, to whatever list they might have had. I don't think they want everybody to. It's a BCC thing. So, I think it's very good. Okay. Well, if you want me to, really, but that will be really great. I can tell you, we've been pushing the work on developing more, I'm filling out guest stock, and we're making headway on it. We're not quite where we want to be at, but I think having that guest stock full during winter helps. They help drive business to the local businesses, hopefully, or two. So I think that's a definitely big fan. Build that plus course that generates, you don't like have capacity sitting idle, generating no cash flow, because there's a carrying cost every single day and every moment of every day. So if we have ways that we can reduce that burden. So I appreciate the staff. I know Rose and Haley and everybody has been engaged on that level. So
I have had, there's a guy who's been looking for mortgage. I think he's in Paulsbow now, but wanted to do liveaboard status. He is a true lover of Kingston. Could he apply for guest stock mortgage over the winter?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome. Okay.
Yep.
I'll try to look at that.
Yeah. So what we do is we try to give, so we try to fill it up, but then what we do is, the condition is you have to move your vessel. If we have daily rate or different people or yacht boats coming in, that's part of the calculation. Like you have to be able to move your vessel, or we reposition sometimes for different rivers. Mm-hmm. So, but we're trying to attract more business during the winter. And especially, I think, when we start like 5 years ago, for 7 months a year, had very little business. We've been building out the number of yacht club visits. I think that's continually. We're just starting to see a little bit of Canadian interest now that COVID's broken up. Well, not completely, but at least people are opening up to traveling. So I think we've got a little bit more. We've got a couple of Canadian yacht clubs. We've got many more yacht clubs. And then we've been trying to push a lot more of the guest mortgage. And then the perm mortgage is continuing to have a strong wait list. I think the only one was BDOC, which is like 30 footers. We got a little bit of softening there on some of the demand, but Successful. Yeah. And sometimes you say, you know, you never know. And I wish they were quite a little more predictable, but we have wait lists. You know, we're not like we're still in full capacity. So I think,
okay.
But it's the guest dock, I think that helps incrementally. And then our fuel has rebounded. We've done pretty well on the fuel this year. But we're not big players. You know, we have many, many, many tiny little lifts of fuel. But then parking has kind of strengthened, but we really need continuity of service from the ferries so that commuters believe we're dependable to operate out of Kingston. Because generally, Bainbridge is, you know, they know they can get across to Seattle on this big state ferries. So I think the continuity of service and building reputation for continuity of service for the state ferries and the fast ferry is key to really building the parking revenue.
I mean, the alternative is there to take the Washington State Ferry to Edmonds and then take the commuter train should there be an outage at Kitsap Transit's system. But it's a different timing thing too. So
they kind of both have to be. So if your backup is maybe, you know, as questionable as your, you know, but I think I see the Kitsap Fast Ferry, you know, they put in a vessel. It's been really consistent now. The new vessel has been pretty consistent in terms of service. And then they have the backup. They're going to do a little bit of requiring another vessel out of San Francisco. So I believe that we should look at the Fast Ferry saying, okay, this is going to be really steady service. They'll have redundancy. And then they do have a plan to bus people. But I'm not sure that everybody knows about it or buys into it quite yet. You know, that's good. They got to communicate that out, but they are part of, they have undergone a marketing plan to get the word out and get that. That's it. So, yeah.
Anything else?
Just wanted to bring up, I remember what I was going to say when Beth had talked about us possibly putting a link in our newsletter, that one of the examples of things going around town that it's kind of, you know, changing is the after traffic management system that's projected 2024. Well, now it's possibly projected 2025. So, you know, that's something that would be important for people to know and be kept up to date on, is when things are changing and projected. Probably, you know, projected before, but it might not be till 2025. So we don't know.
Right.
But it's good to have that as a hey, this is what exactly. Thank you. Right. Right.
And they are working really hard. Yeah. I mean, I think that people don't realize, you know, they don't want to hear excuses, but the reality is that they have a $3 billion fish restoration and culvert restoration program going statewide. And a lot of that is in the Puget Sound, because it's really to try to address the issues for Endangered Species Act compliance to strengthen Chinook and sand steelhead runs, sand runs overall. So the wash dot is really consumed. And that's what a lot of those road projects, when you're driving around, it's really putting in these culverts, fish passage.
Yep.
So that was, once it gets funded, it's like, okay, so then they go about those projects. But that means they can't have, they put those resources towards this project. But so it's a matter of prioritization, only one thing at a time. Culverts?
Yeah. I've been driving around seeing those. I thought it was new sewer system.
Oh, that's culvert, and it's for fish passage. And so they got $2 billion from the state and $1 billion from the Fed. The $3 billion.
Those are the big ones at like Chico Way and the one by on 16.
Which are not sure. They're really culvert projects, but that's what's, to some extent, that's what's affected the, I think, moving ahead on the as well as the ATMS, very important projects. They're just being realistic. So they said, well, you know, we know, you can see when you go into the website, you know, for the swash shop, they don't have, you know, they don't really have a real schedule. That's because it's not really predictable. So But I talked to the project engineer. I called him up, Joseph Perez, great guy. And he just said, realistically, I don't think we have the resources until they finish out 305 and some of the culvert projects. And that will take them into next year for sure. So he said the reality is the other issue is they have to finish their right-of-way acquisitions for the realignment. So that, you know, the process of, you know, that's condemning property and getting the realignment and buying the properties that are adjacent. That's not completed. They have started it for sure. And then, of course, the design, completing the design, but all of that has to kind of, it's somewhat sequential in terms of being able to execute that.
Well, it's been my understanding that the ATMS system and the realignment were also sequential with the ATMS coming first. That's what I understood.
That would be, and I don't know for sure. I understand. The ATMS is also contingent on the finalization, whether it's a 3 or 4. And I think the bias is where it's the 3-lane. But if you have a 4-lane, that affects the design of the ATMS pretty substantially, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And so the discussion is, well, okay, what does that mean in terms of condemnation of the properties, adjacent properties, right? Because you might need to take a little bit more. Though I think when I did look at the parcels, I did a quick overlay of both. You're going to affect these same parcels, whether it's 3 or 4. And so I don't know if it runs up into whether they still live and operate property or not. But the realignment, they need at least the right of way secured to be able to know what the scope of ATMS and when they design it.
Yeah.
Because 3 versus 4 is a big. So yeah, they are independent. I do think the ATMS is supposed to go, but even on that, on the funding of that came through the rural, some of the rural township center bring. I'm not sure about the timing of that funding.
Okay, anything else? Well, that takes us to predicting our next regular meeting, which is Wednesday, October 18th at 6:30 p.m. here at the Village Green Community Center, set up hybrid as we are today. And with that, I think we're adjourned.
Motion to adjourn at 2:30.
I'll second that.
Any objection? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you.
Adjourn.
I tried to fix it. I deem it unflexible.
Saw you trying to work your magic over there. I thought, oh, Corey's got a project.
Yeah. I get this. We're okay.